Blog Talk Radio.
Pancho Sanchez doing the Watermelon Man. That is the Pancho Sanchez, the Watermelon Man. You have reached the K. Thompson Live Show. I am the son. My name is Eric Payne, and you are?
The mother of Eric Payne. How are you, Eric? What's going on?
All right. How are you today, Ma? Today is April 22nd, 2015, and there's a lot of things in the news to talk about. That you wanted to talk about, and we're going to start. We have a couple of callers calling in, so we're going to open up the phone lines right away. Callers, if you I'm sure you can hear me now. I'm going to open your mics. Just give us a little bit of time to preface the conversation. Both mics are open for both of you callers. We're going to be discussing, as you wanted to discuss, Ma, the killing of Freddie Gray in Baltimore, and just thought that's been the latest in the news. And we can also get our guest to chime in on that as well. But you wanted to say first off.
First off, it's really a shame. It's awful, and, you know, it's going on all around the country. And we were talking, you know, last week about the possibility that this is something that's been planned by the various, this is what I think anyway, by the various police departments. And I think it's just going from one city to the other, and it is big. And it is getting ready to jump off into very nasty, negative stuff if the government does not do it. And when I talk about government, I'm talking about governments in the various cities. Now, we're talking about Baltimore. Now, Baltimore is not right down the street from us, not too far away. However, they've been having problems for a long time. I mean, when we were in WLIB, we had covered some, you know, stories. And I had such tough stories, so and people were very dissatisfied with the police department there. So we do have people on their line right now waiting. We don't know, but not quite sure. One of them might be Mal, and the other one may be Wayne, and who knows. But we're going to be talking about this for a while, so let's get to the first call.
I don't. Hold on. Before we go, let me just put my little two cents
okay.
in. I don't know whether it's all the planned and all of that. I don't know. Because I just think it's business as usual that's been going on in the United States for since our arrival in this country. And I think nowadays it's just a lot harder to get away with a lot of that stuff because of technology, and people have cameras and video cameras and Instamatic and the ability to automatically live stream and actually to stream it live on some websites as some of these events are taking place. Secondly, I'd like to say that was watching Reverend Al's show last night, and the lawyer for Freddie Gray's family, I think his name is Bill Murphy, I believe, gentlemen, he broke it down really succinctly and really just basically said, since our arrival in this country, black people have had a kind of a bad relationship with police officers because when it was illegal to be black, for all intents and purposes, it was illegal to be black in America. We were slaves, and then out of slavery, semi-set free, Jim Crow and all that. So pretty much the way I look at it, it was pretty much illegal to be black. And so what would happen is that those that were charged with keeping the law, whether it be keeping slaves in line at that time, going to get slaves that were allegedly fugitives, he spoke about the Fugitive Slave Act, which would allow people to go and catch slaves who were free and bring them back. And so since that time, the relationship with police officers in the black community has been one of adversaries, so to speak. And I thought that the way he described it was really perfect and really lands us to where we are today. Reverend Al kind of brushed over it and said, yeah, that's back in the day we're talking about today. But I thought he missed the point that the gentleman was trying to make, is that that's why we were led in this position today. because some people feel it's their duty to control the masses or to control the black people, that black horde, that population. And I think that that's an unspoken, unwritten kind of heritage that's almost been passed down to these current day, not all, I'm not going to say all, but to a certain number of the law enforcement individuals. What do you think, callers? Is that Mal out there and the other caller? Hello.
Hi, Mal Wolfolk here. How you doing?
All right.
Hello. Hello, can you hear me?
How are you both?
What?
How are you both?
I can hear you. How are you doing?
Oh, fine. What's your thoughts on the topic at hand, Mal?
Well, my thoughts are a few. one of them is, of course, that we have to be a little bit more proactive about creating our own economies, because one of the circumstances that provides for a situation of questionable behavior that allows somebody to react to it is sometimes desperation. So part of the remedy, I think, problem clearly stated as you did, the remedy, I think, is for us to be more proactive in investing in each other and in our communities rather than, as often happens, us leaving our communities when we have resources to their own devices. Other communities do that. Other communities invest in their own communities. They'll stay where they are. They'll create better buildings. They'll start credit unions and invest in people who want to open up businesses in that community, and they dig in. And we've seen people come here from halfway around the world and in less than 20 years have a greater, you know, economic continuity in their communities than we have in 100.
So you're saying that's part of the problem is that black flight, those black people that do well, they leave the neighborhood, leave the community, and what happens is that the community loses its economic and political power. Is that what you mean?
That's what I mean, and that's no secret, and we have to be very aggressive about reversing that. And you know, people understand if you're doing better and you can afford, you know, another 3 feet of lawn and, you know, all of that, I don't begrudge anybody that. I think the thing is that you should bring your economic and, to your point, your economic and political resources back to that community to keep that community empowered, because traditionally the numbers are in that community, and that's the nature of, you know, political determination.
Okay.
Voting numbers.
All right, Mal. We got a couple other callers busy. We're busy tonight because apparently a lot of people want to get in on the discussion. Let me just welcome our other co-host, I believe, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Hey, Wayne, how you doing?
Hey, Wayne.
All right, yourself, Eric and Kay. That sounds like the erudite Mal Wolfolk. Is that who I think it is?
Yes, it is.
Present, Mr. Gilman. Dr. Gilman, I'm sorry.
How are you, Dr. Wolfolk?
I am well, sir. I am well.
That's good to hear.
So why don't you chime in real quickly, Wayne? We have another caller on the line at a 954 area code. We're going to get you in on this discussion as well, caller. But Wayne, why don't you chime in if you've heard what we just said? We're discussing Freddie Gray, and if you heard any of the comments that Mal just made, I think he made some very good points. What do you think?
Yeah, I happen to agree. I didn't get to hear the question, but I happen to agree with Mal's answer in terms of having to recycle our dollar in our community. We still have problems doing business with ourselves. And, you know, I think that's part of the problem. It's an element of trust. And then, you know, the thing is that I see where sometimes we don't appreciate what it is that we have. And other communities come in. I speak primarily of the gentrification that's gone on in Brooklyn, which is a classic example. The neighborhood I grew up in is predominantly now in a different direction. And, of course, those who held on basically have done the custodial work. But, I mean, that is mirrored in other places like Harlem. You see it in Newark and other municipalities where, you know, people you know, no longer want the extra lawn space. They want the easy commute to work.
Yeah. Also, Wayne and Mount Fiesta, you know, let me get this in here. It is really important that people become politically aware, because that's where the power is. If they become politically aware and put people in office that they can trust and they have a relationship with the African American community, the Latino community, then you get power. So it's economics plus culture and plus really watching the police department. Okay, very, very carefully.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's. We have a number of other callers on here. Caller at the 954 area code. What do you think about this discussion?
Well, I actually called to listen in, but let me tell you, what I think about it is we are trying to still be nonviolent in a violent system. There are way, way too many handguns on the street. I live in Miami, and every single morning, young people are dead. Either they're dead via the police or they're dead via the Russian mafia handguns on the street. We have to make some decisions about feeding brain cells and repairing nervous systems. We have to stop shopping black stores and white stores, because black people who have enough money to own a store often act like a white person. So we just need to stop shopping and start thinking. If you're saying money and economics are going to make the difference, well, don't buy nothing. Be hungry for a day. Be hungry for 7 days. Make yourself known. If it's money that makes the difference, then stop it.
True.
Okay, that's a good caller. There's a, let me get the 773 area code. Let me get you in here too, caller, at the 773 area code, if you would like to put your two cents in, since you're listening, or if you just want to listen while I'm
talking. You're on air.
I was just listening. I just came in and heard the last probably minute, but I couldn't agree more. And what we need to do is we need to start collective bargaining by not shopping with people who kill us.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need to do is save our money and then go and buy from black stores. That's what I do. I only shop like twice a year. And when I do, I take my money and I put it in with black, I spend it at black-owned businesses.
Yeah.
Well, you must be hungry, lady. I think I know who you are. You said you only shop twice.
I'm just joking. May I introduce her to you, Miss Payne? Miss Payne,
hey, what?
I'm talking
about I-3M. And this sister works with many, many prisoners, political allies we have. So I do want you to know her well.
Uh-huh.
Is this Carol?
No, this is Gwen.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
My voice sounds different this week because I'm supposed to be on vacation and I'm not. But anyway, yes, I have her to call you in, because she can tell you about the hanging in Mississippi. Also, she is very, very politically aware and very, very politically and strategically active.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm hearing everybody correctly, and is that what we need to go into is we need to have that political power. And we just want to make sure that we have the political power, the financial power, the economics, really. I personally think, and I agree with many of the sentiments, that economics power is the key to a lot of it. Economic power is the one thing that the dominance and some of these people, the only thing that they seem to understand is money. And
There's another component.
Let me just finish it. What I was going to say is that the money allows you to get to those other components. And that's my personal opinion. I don't know what everybody else thinks. And we're going to continue on with this broadcast. So if you're hearing things, if you're trying to listen online and suddenly we go off, that's because of the situation we're having with Blog Talk. but this show is going to be continued in archive level. But go on. I'm interested to hear what other folks think about the money and the other aspects we need to go on or we need to approach to give ourselves power to get from underneath this oppressive society.
And not only that, if you have had a run-in or some sort of relationship with the police department, let us hear from you, because so far we're getting people from out of state. That's wonderful. That's exactly what we want to hear. We want to get that power. And with all the women, I'm calling for the women to really get together with this and really start gathering your women's organizations and really pushing for legislation of change regarding the police department. Because this is only going to get worse unless we get very much active. Okay? So let's go to another caller. Are you there, Wayne, Mal?
Yeah, I'm here, Kay. And, just to chime in again, I happen to agree with everyone's sentiment. This is a multifaceted situation, and I'm reminded of a conversation I had with a friend of mine earlier today. I didn't get a chance to see the New York Times yesterday, but apparently there was a piece on the fragility of black male lives. And they did a study, I don't know if it was the Times or some research group, did a study across the country, and it talked about how black men are basically being cut down in their ranks as they get older. We all know that many of them are in the prison population. Of course, there's an agenda with that in terms of getting support in some whole communities, not just in the urban centers of America, but in the suburbs. They have a whole economy by maintaining young black and Latino males or other people of color who are caught up in the legal system. But according to the study, not just the issue of law enforcement, but health care and all sorts of other issues that affect black males, particularly the worst part of this country for any black man to reside in, ironically, I'll throw the question out, where would you think is the worst locality or municipality in which this New York Times study revealed yesterday that a black man could actually reside in this country? Kay, Eric, anyone, Mal?
Oakland.
Say that again?
Oakland.
The worst locality in this country that any black man can exist, where they won't get legal recognition, poor health care coverage, and poor education, everything else, based on the New York Times study, it was Ferguson, Missouri.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to see if I can get a copy of that study that was published yesterday, but I was shocked when I found out about it. And, it just goes to show, what's going on. There has been a seismic change in the American culture to begin with, even with the election of Barack Obama. But to be faced with that kind of nonsense, and we have a person of color, well, I need not even, because every week we talk about that, Kay and Eric, the issues that the administration is facing. The fact that Loretta Lynch is still hanging there in limbo speaks volumes by itself.
So we're really talking about economic power, okay? And we're also talking about, go right back to the political power. That is so important. And I think people are becoming to be, what we're dealing with incarceration of, black men and young Latino men is the fact that that's big business in itself. That is a form of slavery. Some of them are being arrested for minor things, other whites are not. And we really have to be very active and proactive. So in order to do that, you have to, start your own businesses, our businesses, and we also have to vote, all right? Because of the fact that it's not going to be getting any better, you have to be active from every single level, in particular women, because the fact that I'm calling on the women because we are powerful, and we can do these things because we do have the organizations to do them.
Right.
So one of the things Dr. Clark said before he died was that we're going to have to put some lives on the line if some things are going to change. And apparently nobody wants to put no lives on the line. Let me give you an instance. What's that guy who killed Trayvon Martin? That boy walked the street like he hadn't did nothing. Did y'all see the 73-year-old deputy who killed the brother go on vacation in the Bahamas today?
Exactly, yeah.
No way. Y'all can't just let that happen. That's unbelievable. Where the father? Are they that afraid to die that they'll let somebody kill their son and do nothing but march? And if it's true that Trayvon's family got $2 million on an insurance policy for a wrongful death 30 days after his death, the policy was taken out, that shit is more than unreal.
Uh-huh. Well, good thing we're on the internet.
I echo our sentiments, yeah.
You know, and I agree with you. You know, the one thing that was in my mind is that there are no consequences. Like you said, there's no consequences for these guys' actions because they do it so often with impunity. But I think that I'm pretty sure that we all realize that this has been going on, and just because of technology nowadays, we're made more aware of it. But it's been going on like this. I don't think there's any uptick in the amount of black men that they've been killing. It's just that now we're able to document it. And they can't get away with it. People who do these crimes can't get away with them as freely. Cameras are everywhere in our society. Even the cameras that law enforcement chooses to put up to fight crime is catching a lot of these rogue criminal law enforcement officers. They aren't really cops. They're criminals and walking around dressed up like cops. And when you walk, when there is no discipline, no consequence of your actions, then you're just going to walk as you said earlier, as a woman sit there with impunity, walk the streets like it's okay. This guy, I mean, it's ludicrous. I don't know what kind of monkey court system they have in Oklahoma where this guy gets to go on vacation. But it makes sense because the dude he gave money to, the sheriff, who's the one who was standing up there yesterday making a speech about whatever he was making a speech, there's no consequence. This guy, it's a conflict of interest. This guy gave money to the sheriff, and he's a deputy, and the sheriff that he gave money to is the one in kind of a decision-making position. So, you know, that's why I say it's about money in America. It's not just about the vote. It's about the money, because when you have the money to get the vote out, then you're starting to make things happen. When you have the money to set the agenda, and a lot of these state legislatures that want to take voting rights away from black people and people of color and other minorities, it's about the money to set the agenda. That's why the Koch brothers, you know, these billionaires, they set up think tanks. They give money to colleges. They give money to various causes. And then, you know, when you're giving money, you kind of tweak the outcome a little bit. You can kind of come in and maybe pressure people to say, I'm giving you this money for this foundation. So the outcome of this social study of whether there's racism or not, we need it not to show that there's still racism in America. And lo and behold, what happened? Some of these studies come out to verify some of these idiotic, lunatic things that are being said by some of these individuals.
You know, Eric, as you mentioned that, whatever happened to the effort to cap campaign finance funding?
Whatever happened to the effort, I'm sure the effort is still there, but there's just as big an effort to fight it. I mean, the effort is that you have a lot of the majority of Republicans, I think, that are in the Congress and the Senate, and so that effort is probably not going to go as far. And plus, when you have Republican president stacking the Supreme Court, which ends up making the final decision in a lot of those situations, we have a right-leaning court, right? So you got, what, Alito, you got Roberts, you got the crazy one, what's his name? Uncle Clarence, the Italian gentleman. Scalia. So, you know, they kind of make their agenda known, right, for the most part. So until one of them dies off or, you know, then we'll be able to tip the court. But, you know, there's always seems to be that, I mean, just in my personal observation, they always seem to have a kind of a checkmate. They kind of twist the rules. It's that one last rule that we didn't have, that one last page of fine print that we didn't see, that we didn't read. So there's always some little extra tricky stuff going on. Like Schumer himself said the other day, we'll see if this deal goes through about whatever deal they're talking about with Iran. But he did say, remember, it's Republicans we're talking about, so, you know, we'll believe it when we see it, basically is what he was saying, because they always come up with some kind of last-minute trick or some kind of last-minute gimmick to kind of get around, you know, what we're trying to do. So it remains to be seen whether the political – I don't know whether the political process I'm hoping, and I have to hope and believe in the political process to change things. But, you know, like was stated from the lady from Florida, our people are getting killed day in and day out.
Come on, right.
And some of these individuals will walk around with no consequence. No consequence. Like you said, somebody in the community, all of a sudden you got a price on your head. You know, and sometimes if there are certain consequences, people will change up their actions, trust. Just like they shot when the deputy accidentally shot Eric Harris out there in Oklahoma, and they said they reassigned some of the undercover cops who had their knees on his head as he was dying, saying, "I've been shot." Because from what I heard in the news, they said they reassigned some of those guys because there were threats against them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that's what you get when you're a barbarian, when you're a criminal, walking around like you're a police officer.
Exactly.
That is my thought.
Okay. If I can speak, let me see. First of all, it's not about the money. It's about white supremacist system that we live under.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how much money black people call themselves having, if we have that, the rules can change where money doesn't matter. If we have the political vote, that doesn't matter, because they decide who's going to be running. And if perchance we get a politician elected who has our best interest at heart, then that politician ends up dead. Harold Washington, Chokwe Lumumba, two examples. Mm-hmm. Our greatest, best weapon has always been and will always be culture. We must recognize that we're an African people inside of a white supremacist America,
mm-hmm.
and decide what to do from there. Like I said, I do the majority of my shopping twice a year and with black people only. That's where I put my money. That's where I put my effort. I get people out of prison. I get people out of jail. I get space of execution. And I don't get paid for that.
Mm-hmm.
And until you are willing to be tired, overworked, irritated, frustrated, and angry on a constant basis for your people, then there's nothing else to say. We must sacrifice for our people. And if we're not willing to do that, then there's no sense in talking about it. But it must be culture is our greatest weapon. We must realize we're an African people and act that way. Live that way, act that way.
You're absolutely right.
And I don't disagree, but however, I'm kind of, there's some things that kind of stand out as being a contrast to what you said in terms of establishing our culture within a white supremacist society. Yes, I totally agree that that's how America was founded. America was founded, and it was founded by a certain group of people, and they had these beliefs, and they created a system where they thrived more than the people that were of color, clearly. Clearly, it wasn't about trying to get along with the other people that were already here. If that was the case, they wouldn't have annihilated them and tried to kill them off the land. So I agree with you that we were living in a society that wasn't created by us and for us, and that thrived on our subjugation and making us second-class citizens, making us slaves and cattle and property. But the thing that drove America during those early years was cotton was king. The financial benefit that the cotton crop created for a lot of these things. That was America's cash crop, right, at one point. That's what helped to build America. So there is a large part of finance that goes into what America believes, capitalist society. And within that, you have white aspects of white supremacy operating within that society.
No.
But I believe it's my belief that what is even more precious to those oppressors as they continue to have their system of oppression, what is more important to them is their money. That's why they fight so hard. Okay, I hear you. Let me finish my point. That's why they fight so hard not to pay more taxes. That's why you have 1% of the population controlling, 99% of the wealth. So, there is certain data that would go to strengthen that case and that point.
Capitalism is only a weapon of white supremacy.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
But it's white supremacy. It's not capitalistic. It's not a capitalistic society. It's white supremacist society. And inside of that, one of the activities, one of the weapons, is economics. But it is not driven by economics. It's driven by supremacist values.
Okay.
They'll sacrifice money for power. That's the reason why you have the money that was spent in Afghanistan and Iraq. More than the U.S. could afford to spend, but it did so in its quest for power.
So you don't think that power, to get that power, was a way to get more money? You think that the United States was just over there messing around and over there for what? I mean, you're saying that they use that to get more power, but what are they getting the power
money
for?
Money was used to get more power. Money was used to get more power, and with power comes resources.
Right, and so the resources, right? Okay. The resources.
Right. So what I'm saying is, it's a weapon. Money's a weapon. Always
right,
understand
you,
that. And sometimes it's
resources.
Utilized, and sometimes it's not.
Okay.
Just like, for example, instead of using money, there's also religion. Religion can be used instead of money. Education can be used. Entertainment can be used. There's many different weapons. Money's one of them.
I'm confused because I happen to understand, and forgive me, Eric, I'm trying to understand the sister's position here, because I understand in one sense how it is used as a weapon, and this conversation reminds me so much. I would like to share a personal experience I went through the last 48 hours in my own business, but I fear if I get racial on this air, it would work against me, God forbid, if I have to go to court next month with what I intend to do. But the problem is that I happen to agree with what she's saying in terms of it being used as a weapon, but we still exist in a capitalist society. And the thing that really struck home with me is that, in some instances, white folks will come along and they would want to make an agreement with someone of color to do certain things, but if it works against their agenda, they will quickly change the rules in a nanosecond. Just
right.
And that's the thing. I mean, we're capitalists. We're all here. I need money to feed my stomach, to feed my car, to feed my home. We're not living in a socialist society. But I think the double entendre, what the underpinning of what I think you're trying to say, is that they will use things, the weapons, and again, I just wish I could voice what I want to right now, because you just hit home with something I'm going through on a personal level. But it just bothers me, particularly from some of the liberals people are, in many instances, worse than the Tea Partiers. At least I know where the
right.
Tea Party's coming from. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the liberal
yeah.
stuff that I get, you know, I go insane on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but we're not capitalists. We live in a capitalist society, but we're not capitalists. A capitalist is someone who owns the means of production. We don't.
Right. Well, let me ask you.
Any black business that is producing something is not part of that system? Is that what you're saying?
You can produce something. Everybody produces something. You can produce it within a socialism, communism, or capitalism. That doesn't determine the fact that we produce something does not make us capitalists.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know if
another
I don't
thing
know if
too
I,
I wanted to just correct was when we said that the policemen who are murdering black men are getting off scot-free. I want to say that they're not getting off scot-free. They're getting off scot-rich. People like Darren Wilson has made over $1.1 million due to contributions for him. George Zimmerman made over $100,000, and they all get off scot-rich. Not
so why is it not about money then? I'm not understanding.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying about it. I'm not understanding why it's not about money, because to me money seems to be the way with which you can fight it. And if it's about our culture, then as you say, I just kind of disagree. I mean, we're kind of saying the same thing.
No, we're not.
It's all right. Well, let me make my point then.
Yeah. No, we're not saying the same thing. What I'm saying is that white policemen who kill black people are rewarded financially.
Okay, let me just make my point. I'm just curious as to when we talk about it's about our culture. I think about our music. I think about hip-hop, and I think about other forms of music that are part of our culture and that have seemed to be co-opted by people to make more money for them, and those people that have become extremely wealthy, those few individuals, members of our ethnic group that have made that money, had to make certain deals to make even more money. And even though it was our culture, the music they make comes out of our culture, we still don't seem to control that. Somebody else is getting rich off of that. Except for the few black people that have made those music. You got the Dr. Dre, you got the Kanye, you got the Jay-Z and other people. But we haven't made the type of money that could really help to change a community, except for a few.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about our culture, when we speak of the moment of culture, I just wonder that our music is our culture. But
that's not our culture. That particular music and those particular so-called musicians that you're speaking of do not represent our African culture. These people do not even produce hip-hop. They produce garbage hop. Talking about killing black people, slinging drugs, things that diminish or create genocide in our community are absolutely white entertainment, not black entertainment, not black culture. And when I say black culture, I'm talking about African, traditional African culture, which is what we must return to. If we have a mindset of true Africa, then we will not find ourselves in the position that we are today. Our large rejection of being African is our key problem. And as important as money is, the greatest weapon used against us has been religion.
Okay.
Are you saying that religion?
Go ahead, Wayne.
I'm just in a quandary here, and I'm trying to understand, you know, basically, you know, what she's saying. So I got the sense just now that what she was saying, that religion has also worked against the African culture that we have in this society today.
Yes, absolutely, because we have adopted their culture and have not kept
right.
ours. So we started praying to a white Jesus, a Jesus, period, right? But that wasn't
okay.
part of our culture.
Right.
Right.
It doesn't
apply to all people of color. I mean, what about those who are of Muslim faith?
Same problem.
And
Hebrew, same problem. Same problem. It's just that the majority of black people here are Christian. However, absolutely, all of that, all of that has been to the detriment of our culture and our people.
What about the Coptic religion? What about something that's come out of Africa? I mean, what is your spin on that?
Well, Coptic, once it came out of Africa, it was no longer African. Christianity had a whole other ideology when in its origination. What we have is something that's twisted and corrupted.
Okay.
Now we have a turn the other cheek kind of philosophy brought to us by Paul. We have a system of not making a repair for any damages that are done. We just pray and God forgives us and that's it. But that wasn't the original Christianity, which was spelled K-R-S-T.
Those are a number of thoughts.
Out of curiosity, I was just wondering if she's agnostic, atheist, or believer, non-believer. You know, I'm just out of, you know, I mean, if you care not to share that, that's fine. Out of curiosity, I just wanted to know.
Yeah, I'd rather not.
Okay.
I'm just kind of thinking that.
Only because it's really not apropos to the conversation.
Right. And if we can get back to really what we all kind of, if we can all go around and think what needs to be done in terms of this police brutality against people of color, what do we already know, what do we each think the best course of action would be to take?
Okay.
Why don't you go first, ma'am?
Okay. Well, as I said before, we live under a system of white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, you have law, you have education, entertainment, sex, religion, economics. And so all of those aspects of white supremacy must be addressed and attacked. So if you deal with the economics, then it's buying black. If you're dealing with the education, it's studying Africa. If you're dealing with entertainment, we do not deal with any type of music or entertainment that does anything to damage our community. Okay? And the thing about a white supremacist system is that we must understand it, we must know what it is and what it means. According to Dr. Neely Fuller, who gave us what white racism and what white supremacy is, he says that white supremacy, if you don't know what it is, if you don't know how it operates, anything else will only confuse you. And we are confused people at this point, so we need to get clear.
Okay. So Wayne, what do you think? Let's go to the next caller. Wayne, what do you think that we need to do to address this the particular problems of that we're facing?
I'm at a loss. You know, every time I open the paper, turn the TV on, and, you know, like this demonstration that's taking place in Baltimore, you know, it's just a regurgitation of what you, your mother, Mal Wolf, all of us have gone through in the last 30 years, and in terms of what we've covered and experienced, and to think that I'd like to think things were slowly getting better, but I just think that I don't know what the answer is other than the power of the voting booth and hoping that would make a change. you know, I look at what goes on in the African-American community, and I think in many instances African-Americans dictate American culture, popular American culture. You know, from an entertainment perspective, it, you know, something that will start out in a predominantly black community, ghetto, whatever you wish to call it, sooner or later, in a short space of time, especially if it's amplified by media, you see where what we used to call the larger culture embracing it as if it is their own, you know? So, I mean, in some instances, I have to agree with what the sister who's been on the phone discussing about how we need to return back to our origin. But, you know, I just wonder, since we're here in the States, unless we're talking about separation, I really don't know what the answer is. In fact, I would defer to a wiser man than I am. It's the great Val Wolfram, someone who is the symbol of success.
Oh my God! I'm still here. I'm still here.
Okay.
What do you think about
Val? What's your take?
Well, let me say this about that. A couple of things occur to me. Nobody's saying. Well, some people are, but nobody's really making the case out of the Mormons being racist because they wanted the whole state to themselves and are the only people I know, besides, of course, the southern states, who fought the U.S. Army to keep it that way. I don't see anybody really going down to Mulberry Street and calling the Italians racist because they want to keep it Italian. I really don't hear in the news anybody, including those who are quick to talk about people being anti-this and anti-that, going out to Flushing and telling all those Asians you all are being racist because you want your own community and to control your own economy and your own politics. It's only when it comes to us that if we talk about it, it becomes separation as opposed to consolidation. And we need to get past being labeled by somebody else when we do just what the other people, when we try to do what the other people are doing successfully every day and have it turned into something that's anti anything rather than, as Malcolm said, no, it's just pro us.
That's true. Hello.
That's why, yes. That's why I love listening to Mal Wolfer.
Well, as they say, just say it. But the other thing is, here's another point that I will drop in, and I became conscious of it, I guess it's almost 20 years ago now, when I got involved in, I guess, Mount Vernon politics for a minute. And speaking to being involved and participatory, I think that when I got involved, people were talking about things aren't right in Mount Vernon, the schools aren't right, we're not getting our fair share, we're not being represented, policemen on the police force, so on and so forth. Everybody should go out and vote so we can have a mayor that represents our interests, and that was true. However, when I got into it, and it turns out to be replicated in a lot of places, I believe the municipal budget for Mount Vernon was about $30 million a year. And people should certainly vote city council, mayor, to determine how that money, which is their money, tax money, is reinvested in the community. However, it turned out that the school board budget was $60 million a year.
Mm.
And the school system was 80% black. And nobody was going out to vote for the school board. So you had a six-person school board, all Europeans, overseeing the 80-plus% African-American educational system,
mm-hmm.
and the community was indifferent to going out to vote. So in a town that was itself almost 70% African-American, the school board that determined how and how well, their children would be educated and participatory, and be familiar with everything, our history, their history, because we're living here, their efforts at supremacy, our efforts at Willie lynching and, you know, all those aspects that come under education, primary, secondary, cultural, and other things, folks were unaware of why they were being undermined, and, you know, until we got there. This was a radio station promotion and made them aware that twice as much money is being determined about the future of your children than is being spent on the police force, the fire department, and everything else, and you need to get involved with school board elections. And that's mm-hmm. across America.
So that would be the resources then. You're talking the financial then, once again.
Well, it's one begets the other. Yes, and again, like the system, it has a tool.
I guess that's basically the argument I was making, and maybe is that one begets the other.
Yeah.
And we talk about resources and all of that, but one they're all entwined, especially when you live in a society and that bases their mode of operation on capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And on a money-based society. We're not in a socialist society where everybody gets to go to school for free or health care for free. You got to pay to breathe in this country. And so, you know, it's like you said, one begets the other. So they're closely tied and one affects the other.
But also, you know, if you can understand that, everyone is getting cold and whatnot. But we started this conversation because of the killings that are going on. These are very real things. Not to say that the whole cultural aspect is realistic either, but what can we do about it? That's the whole point. You know, we're talking about something really concrete, not that the other aspect of this is not concrete, but what can we do about police murders of black people in the country?
Well, here again, very often police commissioners are appointed by mayors or city managers or whatever, and it goes back to we certainly, amongst other things, have to be more mindful and more, mm-hmm. you know, proactive about voting in every election. And we can't, what difference does it make? Well, if you vote in a city manager or a city council president or a mayor, and that mayor gets to determine who the next police chief is or police commissioner or whatever the title is, then you better, you know, you need to get out and vote because you want to vote somebody in who, when it comes to appointing that head of the police force, is going to be proactive with your interests. And in their hiring practices, whether it's how many Hispanics and how many African-Americans or how many women are on there, you know, you have to backtrack it to the source of influence and power. And I'm just circling back and echoing what everybody else is saying. It starts with mm-hmm. voting. It does make a difference. One of the things that we miss often as people of color is that we do not have to be 51% of anything anywhere. Most elections and primary levels, most, are determined with maybe a 10 or 15% swing margin. Be it Republican or Democrat, 4 or 5 people in the field, 2 people in the field, unless somebody's just a runaway candidate, 10 or 15% can make the difference. So we are powerful if we have as little as 10 or 15% population that'll get up and vote in determining the future of our communities.
I agree with you, Mal. The problem is that we don't come out for the non-sexy elections. We only come out for the sexy ones.
Well, that's the task. Let me circle around to my other reference of underutilized resources. We have probably 100 significant African American organizations in the country that, unfortunately, for all kinds of reasons that I don't really appreciate, choose to stay out of politics.
Mm.
They'll get involved with everything else. They'll get together annually, 5 to 50,000, and celebrate how smart they are and how well they've done and how good they look and how big the car is they rented for the weekend so their friends think they did well. But, you know, if you ask them how much they contribute, how much they contributed to the schools they went to, that gave them all of that to help the next person of color, because a lot of them are proud to say, I went to, you know, an HBCU, one of the 140-something land-grant colleges of 48 private colleges. And when you ask them how much they send back to help their community grow and stabilize it, including creating an opportunity for their children's circumstance to be improved, by having a broader resource base of economically, politically, culturally viable people through education. I'm embarrassed to say that they're not embarrassed to say they didn't send anything back. And when you say, okay, you know, I understand this year might have been tough because maybe you had a child in college or maybe the roof leaked or something or you had, you know, medical issues. But, you know, how much did you send last year? You know, and I'll go back 20 years. And I'm talking about folks, let's say, between 35 and 55. Because I understand when you just get out of school, you're trying to get a place to stay and get settled. I understand after 55, you might be trying to retire and get your retirement thing in. But there are probably 20, 25 productive years where I know you have $50 a year that you could send back to get the next person of color educated and not sitting around on the street. Because you spend that on a night with drinks out at the so-and-so's joint every week. So the other thing we really have to do and take some responsibility for is amongst those organized organizations, sororities, fraternities,
right,
MBAs, lawyers, doctors, Indian chiefs, that will go out drinking every Friday night and maybe Saturday night celebrating how smart they are and not send any money back to sustain our black colleges that are dropping like flies because of lack of accreditation, because of fewer students, because they can't provide scholarships, because other folks have reduced the Pell Grants. You know, we're becoming genocidal, those of us who are somewhat successful, by not doing that. And the fact of the matter is, 50 a year, really, is tax deductible. If somebody,
exactly,
you know, somebody's telling me they're making $150,000 in the household or more, and they're not paying any taxes, then I'm not mad at you. But if you tell me you're paying $15,000 in taxes, and I say, well, why didn't you contribute some of that money to, you know, a black college, and you get the tax deduction from it, and you say, you know, you don't tell me anything, then I have a problem because you're giving it to Uncle Sam and then railing when you watch TV and find out it was spent on some bombs being dropped on the other side of the world, but you won't.
Right.
Give it to the school that you went to.
We're going to have to move it right there. You get the last word. That was and that's a great way to end it. Time has flown. I want to thank everybody for calling in to the show here. We're just like 1 minute to go. I want to thank, it was a very lively discussion. Thank you at the 773 number. Thank you for your input. We appreciate that. I want to let everybody know you can listen to the K-Thompson Live Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. or the show is archived on Blog Talk Radio. We want to say thank you to Mr. Mao. Thank you to the sister that called in, to both the sisters that called in. And Wayne, we want to say thanks again for being the co-host.
Thank you.
And
I just want to say we need to vote for Mao and Wolfus to be president.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Thank you so much, everybody. I'm the son, Eric Payne, on the Kay Thompson Live Show.
And I'm Kay Thompson. Join us again next Wednesday from 8 to 9 here on Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. We'll see you again next week. Do it with a little Watermelon Man. Oh,